Idris Elba makes a hands-free call while driving.
Faz, what's happening, my G? How are you? Oh, it's Idris.
Oh, Idris, how you doing, bro?
I'm good, man, I'm good. How are you?
A hug and handshake.
What's happening?
Are you good?
How you doing?
You been busy?
Yeah.
Hey, look, last 7 weeks, boy, this is what we're messing with, yeah? All these cases.
All these cases?
Yeah. I'm about to go to the station to hand these in.
Oh, my days.
So, like, these are the typical Rambos that a lot of the people use.
Yeah.
Like, these cost, like, tenners, Idris.
£10.
But we got weapons that the tubes just can't facilitate.
Yeah.
But look.
A case full of long-bladed knives.
Oh, my God.
These are the kind of weapons that we're trying to get banned.
CCTV footage of a man wielding a knife.
Actually, like man, bro. It's in your bad one, yeah?
Then attacks and fights in the street.
Knife crime is a heartbreaking problem, and in the past 10 years, has almost doubled. I'm Idris Elba, and a few years ago, I became involved in the fight against knife crime. In 2024, I invited a film crew to join me as I try to get to the root of the problem.
A young offender institution.
I want to meet people who've carried a knife.
Now I realise I was carrying a deadly weapon. Back in the day, carrying was pretty normal. Wear your keys, wear your phone, wear your knife.
And get everyone talking about the challenges ahead.
He meets the king.
So we can all push those in power to take action.
He talks with Keir Starmer.
Are you just following me?
And find real solutions.
It is the most rewarding job I've done since I've been in the police in 19 years. It definitely works.
There is hope. There's got to be ways that this can be done. But no issue is permanent. There's got to be a way out of it.
Because this is a problem that can affect anyone.
You don't have to be a bad child. You don't have to be in a gang. You don't have to carry the knife to be the victim of knife crime.
Idris Elba, Our Knife Crime Crisis. Idris talking in 2019.
If you've got a knife or you know someone that's got a knife, tell them to stab themselves right now. Trust me, because you're just going to stab your future if you go and stab someone else. You become a murderer, you go to prison, you ain't got shit. For what? For some beef that lives within your community. You need to see past that. We have to say something about it. 5 years ago, I had this rant. Just felt quite overwhelmed and angry. There's just a constant flux of young people murdering each other. And knife crime happens every day, but that particular day was just very, you know, it was really painful for me. I felt the need and the urge to speak up.
Officers at a crime scene.
So the last 5 years, my focus has been on campaigning to raise awareness and push for solutions.
A white teenage boy in a hoodie sits down.
But to be effective, we need to understand why some people are choosing to carry a knife in the first place.
Jaden, 16 years old.
How old were you when you started carrying a knife?
I think I was 12. In a park in Coventry, I got 20 people run off on me. Carrying all sorts of things. One of them swung an axe. And then ever since then, I didn't step outside without a knife. Well, you're scared after that, ain't you? You're gonna be. You got jumped. So, you're gonna wanna protect yourself some way, innit? And that was the only way I could think of.
Pulling on football boots.
But I don't do that no more. That's old me.
Jaden, training with others at a football ground.
It still is quite normal for where I'm from to see someone carrying a blade on them. I nearly got two pulled out on me this week. So.
In 2024, an average of four people were stabbed to death every week. Source, Home Office, based on the first half of the year. from officers patrolling a cordoned-off area to a grassy hill with the London skyline beyond.
Police are appealing for information after the fatal stabbing of 16-year-old Harry Pittman, who'd gone with a group of friends to see the New Year's Eve fireworks from Primrose Hill.
New Year's Eve, countdown to 2024.
He was killed as hundreds of people gathered at the popular spot.
Idris walks in a park.
We often assume all sorts of things about those who get involved in knife crime. But is there a type?
Taylor Pittman, Harry's sister.
Hi, mate. Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Taylor. How are you?
How's your family?
We're getting there. This is his memorial. It's really nice to come and sit here and just, like, be with him. Because it feels like he's here.
You could spot Harry a mile off. And he had bright orange hair.
He's your younger brother, right?
Yeah.
Was Harry at school?
He was at college. He was studying law. He wanted to do something in that sort of field.
Yeah.
He was very clever. Very clever boy.
Smart boy.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking. You know, yeah. I would be in bits all the time.
I have my days. I do have my days.
Yeah, I'm sure, man. But was it just a beef? Was it a fight?
All we know is there was some sort of altercation, and within that altercation, Harry was stabbed and killed.
Yeah.
The boy's the same age as my brother.
Really?
16-year-old.
I hate to say it, but people think it's a race thing.
Exactly.
You know,
that was the first thing that came out when Harry was killed, was, I bet it was a black person. I bet it was a black person. And it wasn't. It was another white boy. So it can literally be anyone and happen to anyone.
In a TV studio.
There is such a general perception about this whole thing that knife crime just affects black and brown communities. And it's just so disheartening because it's like no one really cares to really understand it. And the truth is that the majority of people that are involved in knife crime are white.
69% of people convicted of carrying a knife are white. Source, Ministry of Justice.
There's also a perception that knife crime just happens in big cities. Knife crime impacts lives across the UK. The areas with the highest rate of increase are Avon and Somerset, Bedfordshire and Sussex. But the worst affected area over the past 2 years is the West Midlands.
Affected areas circled on a map. Then a street of terraced houses in Wolverhampton.
Two 12-year-old boys have been found guilty of murdering a man with a machete in a park in Wolverhampton. The pair, who can't be named because of their age, are thought to be the youngest boys to have committed a knife-related murder in the UK.
It's in suburban neighbourhoods that some of the most horrific attacks have taken place.
Detective Inspector Damien Forrest.
Nice to meet you. I'm Damien.
Idris, thanks for meeting me.
Yeah, no problem.
I've been sort of campaigning against knife crime and for about 5 years. What's been happening is I've just been learning that I don't know enough.
Yeah.
And in this area, it was quite significant. Something happened here, right?
Yeah, we had a 19-year-old lad, Sean C. Sahai, sitting over on that bench over there. And then two other lads, 12 years old, approached him and they were carrying a machete.
12-year-old?
Yeah.
I mean,
they've had a row. Next thing you know, Sean's lying, you know, not 15 metres from where we are now. Massive stab wounds to the back of his skull, a burr in his skull, stab wounds all down his back, and he's dead.
What was the nature of the fight?
We don't know. We've never found anything, or there's nothing been said to suggest that there, you know, there is any way this is like postcode or gang related. But, you know, the reality is the two defendants have gone out with a knife. You carry that knife and it's in play. There's the knife after we'd recovered it.
See, wow, that's the machete.
That's the machete.
I mean, look at that thing.
Yep.
My son's 10.
Yep.
You know, and so this is like right under my nose, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you see, you know, 12-year-olds,
yep,
that must be unusual.
When we learnt the identity of the two lads involved, there was a bit of a collective pause where everyone was like, it feels like something's different here. It feels, you know, you, you, you're crossing the Rubicon a bit. Mm. But at the same time, it was more the grim reality of where we're at rather than complete surprise.
How does this community sort of get past that? How do we not see it happen again?
Knife crime will not be stopped by police officers alone.
Yeah.
That will never happen.
A woman walks two children through the nearby park. It is a criminal offence to carry any knife over 3 inches long, but many are legal to sell. January 8th, 2024, Parliament Square.
I started the year thinking about how easy it is for people to buy knives and how accessible they are.
Morning. We're on something Idris Elba's talking about today. The actor's starting a campaign to speed up changes to law.
He'll join victims' families outside Parliament later to launch a new campaign.
Calling for an immediate ban on zombie-style knives and machetes.
At the top of this year, usually everyone's got a New Year's resolution, got some new vigour. Let's take that new vigour and let's apply it to eradicating knife crime.
The campaign really landed and made as much noise as possible to the point where, you know, the government at the time pledged to change a loophole in the law about zombie knives.
It's the first step with a ban on zombie-style knives and machetes. But it doesn't fix the problem because there are so many knives and swords that are still legal to own and sell.
A block of flats lit up at night.
It's complicated because we all have knives in the kitchen. But maybe the answer is simple. Introduce ironclad restrictions on the sale of all dangerous knives that aren't used for cooking.
Of all weapons carried by young people, less than 25% are kitchen knives. Source: Youth Endowment Fund. A taxi on a residential street in South London after dark.
Six men have been sentenced to life in prison for the murder of a teenager in southeast London.
Just 17 years old when he was stabbed to death in Betts Park in Bromley in 2017.
When I lost my brother, I was 15 at the time when that happened. You'd never been faced with that situation before. You don't actually know what to say. To put it quite simply, I had many different offers involving retaliation around what happened with my brother. You've got to remember, you're looking at it from the outside and you live in a completely different world to the world that these young people are living in. Even with me and my situation, I could have became a habitual knife carrier.
Jamar Jonas, youth worker.
A lot of young people, if they come from certain areas within the UK, before they reach the age of 14, witness some form of stabbing. That's how a lot of young people grew up seeing it happen. That's how I grew up seeing it happen.
We have to take knives off the streets, but we have to also go further than that. This problem of knife crime, it's a real indication of how much we have failed young people, how much the society that that kid is brought up into has allowed this to happen, and it hasn't safeguarded them enough.
From young people in a park to a solitary figure on a rain-soaked street as evening falls, then videos featuring knife crime on social media.
Mate, what are you doing? Get back!
Fights on the street, some in broad daylight.
All right.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Idris views violent footage.
Now, these images are being fed to, like, young people. It's going, you know, in their social media. And it's being fed through their algorithms. And, I mean, when you watch this stuff, it is crazy what you're seeing. And for me, all this does is just really perpetuate more fear. You see that, you go, well, I haven't got a shank, I haven't got a knife, I might need one. And it glorifies it. It might even be pushing kids towards you know, some sort of like arms race where they want to get bigger and more scarier knives.
Over 50% of teenagers say that knives on social media normalize weapon carrying. Source: Youth Endowment Fund.
For young people's minds that are developing, acting out of fear and high anxiety, they result to knife carrying that's almost glamorized in certain spaces.
Samir Hatab, trauma case worker.
I'm Samir. I work with 11 to 25 year olds who have been stabbed. So my background, growing up in a loving family, but I would say slightly dysfunctional. No father was involved, so, you know, mum was mum and dad. Mum was incarcerated at a period of time. Mum experienced domestic violence. We went into foster care.
Did you ever carry a knife?
That was just standard. Carrying was pretty normal, pretty normal. Where your keys, where your phone, where your knife. And you look at the timeline of all these contributing factors to me, in the end, got involved in a gang-related murder where I stabbed someone who subsequently died. I was incarcerated age 18 and spent 16 years in custody.
The red brick walls and blade wire-topped fences of HMP Feltham A, Young Offender Institution. Uniformed officers on duty.
I've been to Feltham Young Offenders Institute a number of times. I've been there as a resident, as an inmate, but I've also been there to deliver workshops as well. So, yeah, Feltham, I know really well. The mission statement on prison walls talks about, in capital letters, rehabilitation. But, you know, a victim's family would want to see you sometimes die, you know, capital punishment, or see you rot in prison.
Idris, in a car.
There's definitely, like, a whole sector of people that just believe that people should just be sent to jail. That's it. You know, that's the only deterrent. And if there are tougher sentencing, there'll be less knife crime. For sure. I can understand where people are just like, that's what we've got jails for, send them to jail.
Idris arrives at the Young Offender Institution.
I've been given access to Feltham, the most violent prison in the UK.
If there was no law,
we'd be at each other's throats. It's just human nature.
So it is important to have deterrence.
Perpetrators with the highest reoffending rates are children aged 10 to 17 years old. Source: Ministry of Justice.
What I want to try and understand direct from the young people that are in prison for knife-related crime is where it all went wrong. Trying to really understand what that fork in the road was. Because obviously the threat of prison hasn't deterred them.
Thank you. Come on in.
Over 30% of young offenders commit another crime within a year. Source: Ministry of Justice.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, man. Thanks for meeting you. Do you mind me asking how long you've been in?
Oh, 2 and a bit months.
Why are you in?
For stabbing.
Stabbing?
Yeah, GBH.
How old are you?
I'm 17.
17?
Yeah.
His face is blurred.
When was the first time you held a knife?
Probably like 13.
So, what I'm trying to understand here is like, 10 years ago you were 7. What was life like for you then? Family life, pretty...
No, family life is messy, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
My dad used to have mad anger issues. He's making no money, coming home, taking it out and whatever.
Right. How was school life for you? Did you...
No, school life was shit. I'll be so real. I'll be so real. Like, I started getting mega bullied. I used to get really bad dandruff and people used to, like, take the piss, say, like, has it been snowing and that, because obviously I had it on the back of my blazer.
Yeah.
And then I used to just look around and I used to think, like, the only people that ain't getting bullied is the people that are this certain way. So I sort of felt the need to become that person, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But then, obviously, I stopped going to school quite a lot.
Did you get excluded from school?
Yeah, like, 4 or 5 times.
Really?
Yeah.
And then when you picked up a knife, what was the thinking around the time?
When I had a knife, I felt like I could do anything, and I felt like I was a god, do you know what I mean? Nobody can touch me. It makes you the bad man in the situation, do you get it? Like, But then push comes to shove and you end up using it. All of a sudden, do you know what I mean? The stuff becomes real.
Michelle Glassop, resettlement officer.
I have a really good relationship with a lot of boys, but I think they can genuinely see that I want to help them to change. But you need to get it when they're young now.
Get to them young? What does that actually look like? Because that's one of the things that I'm sort of trying to understand.
So speaking to the boys, it's as soon as they're disengaged with any school, the boys are telling us that's where you start losing them. This is our Jimmy.
Who's there?
Idris meets another inmate, his face also blurred to protect his identity.
How are you?
Doing good.
Idris. Nice to meet you. How old are you?
I'm 18.
18?
Yeah.
Wow. How long have you been inside?
3 months this time. But unfortunately, I've been in 5 different prisons before my 18th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. For anyone that has an experience with knife crime, the end goal is to not have to be in those situations anymore. Unfortunately, life's not that easy for many people.
Yeah. What was your school life like?
I got kicked out when I was 15.
And you got kicked out, excluded, yeah?
Yeah.
Was that the time when you got your own knife at the junction?
Yeah, literally very, very soon after.
Do you feel like if people are caught with knives and they get a mandatory 3-4 years for that, do you think that would deter them?
It would deter some people, but there's a lot of people that they don't get tired of prison. To them, it's just two sides of the same coin. You're on the road and you're doing crime, or you're in prison and waiting to do more crime.
Wow.
It's more about protecting the public than about rehabilitating these people. But on the other hand, you're not protecting the public because these people will come out one day.
Yeah, almost worse sometimes because of what the energy like is here. We're breeding it.
Yeah, violence breeds violence.
Mm.
Natasha Wilson, Governor, Feltham Young Offenders.
For people coming into prison, this is the last part of the journey.
Yeah.
There's lots and lots of systems and processes that fail them in society. And by the time they get here, it's very costly for the public. It's costly in terms of victims.
Yeah.
And it's costly in terms of how we rehabilitate from this point onwards, because it costs so much per prison place for each individual.
Each prison place at Feltham Young Offender Institution costs over £120,000 per year. Source, Ministry of Justice. In the car park outside...
That was very hard to swallow. Like, you know, finding hope in a place like that is hard. It's difficult because, you know, by the time they're here, they've been cast away from society. Just had this overwhelming feeling that somewhere along the line, if someone had intervened earlier, these prisons would be emptier. We have this sort of like, you know, take my belt off and beat them. They won't do it again. That's not the way it works. That was definitely interesting.
The rooftops and tower blocks of Wolverhampton.
Two teenagers convicted of murdering a 16-year-old boy in a case of mistaken identity have been sentenced to more than 16 years in prison.
Photos of the victim.
Ronan Kander, who had just finished his GCSEs, was walking to a friend's house in Wolverhampton when he was attacked from behind by the two teenagers wielding a sword and a large machete.
Ronan was a mistaken identity. The intended target lives bottom of our street. Ronan wasn't doing anything to anyone. He was just walking home. This perpetrator, he took my child's life. Thinking is his intended target.
CCTV footage shows Ronan walking along a street wearing headphones when two masked attackers run up to him from behind, brandishing a sword and a machete. Pooja Kander, Ronan's mother.
When we were shown the ninja sword, that went through my child's heart. I fainted on the day when I saw it.
Photos and videos of Ronan.
Because I'm looking at him.
There's nice pictures of him.
Yeah. And that's my last Mother's Day with my son.
Ronan grinning with his hair spiked up.
That is literally typical Ronan, that is.
He was a joker.
Birthday cards and a Liverpool Football Club banner on a shelf in Ronan's room as his mum walks in and sits down on the bed.
In Ronan's room.
Oh, as a mum, like, I get up in the morning, the first thing I used to do is dive into Ronan's room, hug him, kiss him. Ronan was, like, still my younger baby, my baby he was. And I would lie here and say, push, can't move up. And he would, like, Mom. And I said, no, let me just have a quick cuddle. And then I'll just have a quick cuddle with him and then go after that, doing what I needed to do. And this side is empty now. I get in this bed. But this side is empty. Try making sense of that to me.
She pats the empty side of the bed.
It's just the perpetrators. What they did was they could have been stopped many times. Everyone failed, including police, education system. They are the perpetrators' families, parents. So all these failures are the reason my son is not on this side of the bed today, that I'm not able to hug him. And these failures will continue if they are not highlighted, if they're not being told that you messed up big time. You failed in your duties.
Parked cars on a street and signs outside local shops.
The perpetrator, an intended target, started their fight in the school. It all starts at school. For that age group. He was an angry young man. The school was quite aware of it.
After a separate incident, weeks before the murder, the perpetrator was placed on early study leave. Unless he had an exam and was escorted by staff, he was not allowed on school premises.
I was like, he's an angry man. You hold on to him. He needed help. If somebody's troubled, you don't leave them out on the road to go and do whatever you want because you don't want that problem on you.
Over the past decade, permanent school exclusions have doubled. Source, Department for Education. Idris in a car.
I'm not saying that we should ban exclusions, but is that an opportunity for, rather than excluding them, saying, actually, this is a moment where we could sort of red flag and say, here's an opportunity to course correct. This moment of exclusion is not a moment for us to say, let's just forget this kid, but it's actually a moment where we can say, let's help this child out. This is the time to help that child.
Samir Hatab.
Look, school exclusions sometimes means keeping pupils safe. I get it. But we're not understanding young people in a school place. We're not approaching it from a trauma-informed lens. Maybe they experienced a bit of domestic violence in the household. Maybe they were troubled at the bus stop today and it's acting out in the class.
Laura Cuthbertson, Police Constable, West Midlands Police.
So it sounds really cliche, but I wanted to join the police to help people and catch burglars and robbers when I was younger. My dad was in the police. I've been in the police 19 years. A majority of that has been frontline policing.
Lights flash as officers attend an incident.
When you're frontline policing on response, you turn up with your lights on to the incident that you're dealing with and you do stick a plaster on it. You don't get to find out why these problems are happening. A lot of the young people we work with have had a rough time. There's been something in their lives that has been a trigger or a trauma that has led them to the path that they're on. when they're excluded, there is no reason to get up in the mornings. There is no no diversion out of life for them. They're, you know, it's what are they going to do with their time? They'll go and hang around with older people or people in the same position as them, and they're going to fill their time probably not positively.
Being excluded doubles the risk of committing serious violence within a year. Source: University of Hull and University of Bristol. Farron Paul, Faz Amnesty.
I run an organisation taking weapons from people in the community and then disposing of them.
A video.
A beautiful 40-year-old daughter said, "Dad, can I go to my cousin's party? My brother's told me, he said, that if you guys are outside, you're a problem." 16-year-old party.
A knife.
Yeah. That's what I confiscated. And if you think that's shocking, just please come to the party.
He unsheathes an even bigger blade.
Well, there's two times in my life where I was personally affected by knife crime. I was 19 years old when I got stabbed the first time, and the second time I got stabbed 3 years after, and I was stabbed 9 times on both occasions. First it was like disbelief, then it went from disbelief to almost why, and then stuck in that process there, the anger came up. But I never ever was tempted to carry a knife. I just didn't see longevity in revenge. You know, like, how is that going to affect other people around me? My mother, my children, you know? That's what I've kind of used as a driving force to build my organisation. And that's why I can almost call it like a relentless fight against knife crime. Because every time I do something for knife crime, I feel like I'm kind of getting back at my personal situation. So if I can find a way for these young people to look at me as a person to get rid of weapons, then that'd be amazing, do you know what I mean?
Farron and Idris meet Met police officers.
OK, so what we're going to do is we'll examine them. We just want to make sure that there's none of the other things that we have interest in.
Copy that.
A young person finds it hard to walk into a police station and drop a knife off, you know. Managed to pick up 5,000 of weapons, over thousands of people. No one's ever been arrested. No one's ever got into trouble. No one's ever been hurt in a collection.
Landmarks along the River Thames in the golden glow of a low sun. May 15th.
What Faz is doing is important. But I'd like the government to make it harder for young people to buy knives in the first place. MPs are debating justice, extending a ban on zombie knives and machetes to include a ban on ninja swords.
Many will be quite frankly shocked that such weapons are not banned already.
This is the issue of ninja swords. And the reason why straight swords are more difficult to ban is because, of course, some of them are held by military historians and for commemorative purposes.
It felt like there was an attachment to swords, which may have some sort of traditional heritage thing. I just couldn't understand it, quite frankly.
The Conservative government opposed the proposed ban, and ninja swords can still be sold. The gates of Downing Street on May 22nd.
We are live in Downing Street as Rishi Sunak calls a general election.
Idris is driving.
Now is the moment for Britain to choose its future.
At a point where the country will vote a new leader, you've got to be intentional in what you do.
Under the Conservative government, from 2015, youth services were cut by nearly half.
If I can influence a government or any leader to kind of, yo, can you please pay attention? Then I'm going to do that.
June 25th. Backstage at a Labour campaign press event, Idris meets Sir Keir Starmer.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you. I'm very well.
Thanks so much.
Hi, everyone. How are you doing? Oh, thank you. How you been? You been all right?
Yeah, good.
The Labour campaign pledged over the next decade to increase youth funding and halve knife crime. Keir Starmer.
Do you know the families we've got around the table?
Yeah, I've met most of them, yeah.
All of them have got, you know, experiences that they need to share and things that can be done.
Can I ask a question? And yeah. You can say, shut up, address.
It's a lot of money. How are we going to pay for it? The way we've said to pay for it at the moment is to get rid of non-dom tax status and crack down on tax avoidance. We can make a pot of money available.
Right.
As you turn this corner, you're on camera as soon as you turn left.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi, guys. How are you? How are you? You OK? Good to see you.
We can't keep on meeting families and having a version of the same conversation. We've got to change the system.
That's really important.
That's the spirit of it.
Yeah. This doesn't stop. You know, we're going to keep going and we have to hold the government, whatever government it is, accountable.
Driving away from the event.
I felt like a bit of a prop, a bit of an imposter.
Out of everyone on that table, a standout is, why are you here, Idris? You know, you make films. Why are you here?
I'm an amplification device.
An emergency vehicle pulls out.
It's all very well wanting to stop knife crime. The big question is, what can the government do to make a difference for the teenagers that are impacted? One possible solution is at hospital, in emergency care.
Blue lights flash in the dark as an ambulance pulls up outside the Royal London Hospital.
The Royal London Hospital has pioneered a programme after seeing young patients leaving with no support and returning to the same dangerous behaviour.
A patient's leg smeared with blood.
For some young people, the only difference between a victim and a perpetrator is who won the fight that day.
Over three quarters of teenagers who were victims of serious violence were also perpetrators of violence. Source: Youth Endowment Fund. Idris in a hospital corridor.
The idea is to intervene at a point where the young person is vulnerable, injured, and open to the possibility of things changing.
A sign above a door reads resuscitation.
Samir.
Idris,
how are you, man?
You're right, yeah? Pleasure nice to see you, man.
Thanks for taking the time
pleasure.
To see me.
Pleasure, man.
What you're doing? It's an intervention, right? This is a system that works right at the moment of crisis here.
Reachable moment.
It's a reachable moment, okay.
Yeah. Our intervention kind of offers support and essentially going on the journey with that young person. We're not trying to remove knives from young people's possessions, we're trying to move it from their heart. A lot of young people think they've got nothing to live for. It's not worth it. And it's about instilling that value to say, bro, like, you've got so much potential. We've worked with young people, Idris, and said, how are you today? He said, no one's ever asked me that. No one's ever asked them, how are you? How are you? So for me, it's basics, man, like basics, especially if you're growing up in a dysfunctional family. So nurturing's very important.
It's really important.
This here is a program. We now work in a multi-agency approach that gets our young people safer, but then hopefully go on to live prosperous lives.
And in that, I feel like there needs to be a much deeper understanding of why.
Yeah, first and foremost.
Right.
Yeah.
Why is this happening?
100%. Poverty is number one at the forefront of violence within the UK. Whether that goes down the throats of people or not, it's the reality.
The poorest areas, compared with the wealthiest, have more than double the amount of crime. Source: Home Office and Department for Work and Pensions.
Yeah, we've got a case at the moment. It's a young adult that was stabbed multiple times in the East London borough. Quite a complex case, quite a lot of childhood traumas. Will try to identify services to ensure that, you know, he has that ongoing support.
Samir continues.
We've supported education, getting them back into mainstream school. Mental health support, support around employment. Some young people don't have ID. We've got them ID. Sounds very trivial, but ID opens up the door, and that was £35 that they don't have. So the opportunity to operate with them in the community starts to build trust and they're like, oh, you're really in my life.
In its first year, this scheme cut hospital readmission rates from 35% to 1%. Source, NHS. Funding for this work is expected to end in 8 weeks. Idris, on the road again.
It is an incredible intervention, but doesn't change the fact that someone is already seriously injured. Are there ways to intervene earlier?
Okay, what happens before the stabbing? And can we do that guidance from that junction before there's an incident?
A block of flats, then youth worker Jamar Jonas.
It's like having those things pop up in the back of your garden. If you decide to just chop it and chop it and chop it every time you see it grow again, then what do you think is going to keep happening? You're going to have to keep chopping it. If you take it out by the root, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to grow back again.
Leading a horse through a stable.
Because of my youth work, I got into the world of horses and I feel like it's helped me level myself. The environment I come from, there's a lot of violence. What was so astonishing about it for me was if I can communicate with such a big animal that can actually cause me a lot of damage if it wants to, and the fact that I'm not having to be forceful or violent with it, it's like, hold on a minute. Why should I need to be violent in any other form of communicating with other people?
Idris, follow me.
Jamar talks with Idris as he leads two horses outside.
So, like, people at home watching this documentary will be like, wait, how are we here?
Obviously, people definitely don't expect this at all. I mean, it's not normal to see a South Londoner just chilling around horses in a yard.
So let me ask you, like, how's your upbringing lead you to where you are now?
I had, like, a mentor for over 10 years. My mentor, he was provided to me by a youth service I used to go to on a regular basis. There was a lot of lessons and advice that was given to me by that individual. He's known me since I was like 11, 12.
What was it like at 12 having a mentor?
It was strange at first, but then it's like when you start having conversations, you start to see it completely differently.
Yeah.
Because then you start to realize, wait, there's other people in the world that actually care about who I am as an individual and actually want to see me do something positive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, if you're in an environment where all you're being role modeled and taught is wrong, then if that's what you know, that's what you're going to do. Do you know what I mean?
That's what you know, I don't know much about what happened to your brother.
My eldest brother, he was out and about one evening, bumped into a certain group of individuals. It's believed that they had a bit of a dispute and it ended with him being knifed to death.
Your mentor had a lot to do with helping you not basically go for revenge or anything like that?
No, 100%, 100%. These are the reasons why I'm not sitting in jail right now. That's the best way to put it. Obviously helped me at the time, understanding that you doing what you were gonna do ain't bringing nobody back. If I didn't have a role model like him, my life would look very different.
Driving away.
Jamar, you know, he's a lovely kid. And this stat intervention has really changed the life around. You could see it in his soul. You can see it when you meet him. So that's a really good example of mentorship gone right and done really well.
Now, wearing a dark suit, Idris is sat in the back of a car being driven to a King's Trust event.
The more people I can get talking about this, the more likely change will happen.
Banging the pot and making noise works. Someone's got to take advantage of a soapbox. Someone's got to take advantage of the breach, and I have those.
July 12th, St. James's Palace.
About to head into the palace, see the king. I'm always sort of thankful for him setting up the Prince's Trust, regardless. Like, it's changed lives, it changed mine, it gave me an opportunity.
Idris, as a teenager.
They gave me a grant when I was 16 to go to the National Youth Music Theatre and study
thinking back there, I was filling out the form and thinking, this is stupid, he's not going to choose me. I came home from school. My mum said, she got a letter. It was a white envelope, handwritten, Idris Elba Esquire, and it had the royal seal. I was like, nah, no way. Opened it up, and in the letter was a cheque. If I hadn't gotten the Prince's Trust, I wouldn't have had that experience because we couldn't afford to go. And it definitely put me on the right map, you know, on the right trajectory.
King Charles talks with a member of staff.
Where is he coming from?
The king is going to actually come and greet you at the car.
What?
Yeah.
No.
So they're going to open the door and he's going to be there.
No, man.
Which is why we cannot be late.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Can you sign?
There's a lot of traffic.
Are you going to greet him at the door, sir?
Yes, but I'm waiting for him to arrive.
A car pulls up outside, then Idris beams, shaking hands with the suited king at the palace entrance.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon. Good
morning.
It's been such a difficult nut to crack, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it really is. The campaigning continues. I'm so thankful to have your heir.
I've always believed that as an adolescent, what you really need is channeling into something constructive.
It's my honour, I think, to have young people at the table, OK? Having their voice a part of this.
Seems to be the great ambition now should be to be able to go into, you know, to try and dig people out from all the hardest areas to reach.
It's really interesting just being around, you know, that sort of level of exposure. And I didn't realise that we'd be sitting next to the king and people from the community discussing it. I didn't think that would happen. You know, if every newspaper tomorrow says, oh, that there was a moment where the king and young people and Idris all sat around the table, that's what we need to see. You know, the media have a massive role to play in this because they've got the loudest soapbox amongst us all. And I'm just like, I'm very hopeful right now.
From Tower Bridge to the imposing Palace of Westminster, overlooking the Thames.
This government has been elected to deliver nothing less than national renewal.
With a new government in power, they've invited people who know the reality of knife crime to meet every 2 months to influence policy.
September 9th.
Actor Idris Elba is in Downing Street today. He's taking part in the Knife Crime Summit.
Inside number 10.
It's rare to actually be here at the beginning of it, of this documentary. We didn't know this was going to happen, so here we are. Got my notes. I'm going to speak for 3 minutes. I don't know what I'm going to say, but I'm just going to say it from the heart.
I find it amazing that people who've been through experiences the like of which some people around this table have been through are able to come forward. You have to be brutally frank with us today and every time we meet.
5-6 years ago, I started to speak up and say something. 5 years later, 6 years later, though, unfortunately, we're still talking. And, you know, talk is good, but action is more important. We need joined-up thinking. And there are all kinds of people here today, from organisations, charities, victims, youth services, health services, police, education, Home Secretary, because everyone here has something to offer this. And let's hold ourselves to task.
My name is Pooja Kanda. I'm here today to tell you about my beautiful son, Ronan. Ronan didn't stand a chance. He tried to run for the house, which was only 2 doors away. He didn't reach his house and he dropped there on the road.
Pooja's T-shirt is printed with her son's face and the words, "Justice for Ronan."
I finally believe that I've been hurt. And that's good. That's good that I was there and was able to express myself. And I hope the government listens.
October 30th.
to the House of Commons, where Labour's first budget for 14 years will be delivered by the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves.
Ms Reeves is expected to say her priority is to invest, invest, invest.
Labour's 2024 budget includes no new funding for youth services. Idris is driving.
The interventions that I've been learning about, the hospitals, the schools, the community, they all cost money. The government says the budgets are tight. We get it. But it's not just about asking for more funding. It's about what you do with the money there is.
Damien Forrest, Detective Inspector, West Midlands Police.
Saying knives end lives, knives get you sent to prison. Everybody carrying a knife knows that. Everybody involved in a fight knows that. So we all need to do our best to identify who's at risk, help them with showing them that there are other options available.
Jaden, 16.
Carrying a knife by itself is, I mean, kind of is suicidal. I guess it was just the environment I grew up in. My mum had custody of me and I got kicked out of there for the stuff I used to be involved with. Moved into my nan's, got kicked out of there because of the stuff I was involved in. My school, I got kicked out there. And then I was out of school for a year. I have autism and ADHD. It just makes it, I didn't know that. So it makes it hard to speak. To anyone.
A police car on the streets of Coventry.
In Coventry, the police are piloting a new approach that seems to have potential. It's called SERVE.
SERVE is the Community Initiative to Reduce Violence.
They're seeking out teenagers they suspect are on a path that leads to knife crime. Then they step in before a stabbing is committed, build a relationship and suggest opportunities that connect with that teenager.
Police Constable Laura Cuthbertson.
This programme, it is the most rewarding job I've done since I've been in the police in 19 years. Children or young people who carry knives, I can honestly say it's a way of life that the majority of them don't want to be in, but they're so stuck they don't know how to get out. So it's kind of guiding them out, mentoring them out. We work with education and career opportunities. It's about finding something that they enjoy and showing them what they can achieve. It's a consistent adult figure in their life to guide them and lead them onto a different path. It definitely works.
She talks with Jaden at football training.
Jaden was referred into the programme after concerns that he might have been involved in gangs, carrying knives, etc. He was a hard nut to crack initially, very quiet, as are most of them initially. So it was just finding a way of breaking down barriers and kind of just forming a bit of a relationship and a trusting kind of bond between the two of us.
Idris joins them and shakes Jaden's hand.
Jaden, how you doing, Idris? Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
How are you?
I'm good, you?
I'm all right, I can't complain. I know that you've, you know, been working with Laura and the SERVE team for a little bit, and I'm just curious. I just wanted to hear how you found it and, you know, how you're getting on with it.
Yeah. Well, when I first joined the SERVE programme, I had no confidence in myself. And, like, well, she helped me out a lot. Yeah, it's helped me a lot. It's helped me a lot.
Do you don't carry a knife?
No, I used to carry a knife and I used to be scared. Some people, they say they feel naked without it. I felt naked without it. Mm. You got to make that change. Mm. And it's hard to. It's proper hard to. I'm still struggling now, but I'm finding my way. I'm finding my way in it.
I heard you was an Arsenal fan as well.
Me?
He's staring.
What? Now you're chatting, Laura. Come on.
You set me up. what team?
Villa.
Villa?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's my great granddad.
All my life, I love football. I'm joining an academy soon as well.
That's amazing. How does that? Do you get in contact with the academy?
Yeah, I just sent an email and just said who we are, what the programme's about.
The programme's giving you ways to figure out how to get past the bad days, yeah?
Yeah, loads.
And then, I guess, like, what you're doing with your sports, that's almost another anchor, isn't it?
Yeah. Anything that's good for me, she'll make sure it happens.
Mm. But you're already talking about the opportunities the academy might give him in terms of qualifications, and one of them could be a coaching qualification. And he's already said the other week, didn't you?
Yeah, I'd love to coach. I'd love to be a coach.
That seems like a really hopeful step. Mate, nice meeting you, man. Thanks for your time, yeah?
You off?
Laura?
Thank you
very much. Really nice meeting you.
The pilot scheme costs £1,500 per child. Funding for the scheme ends in 7 months. A sunny street of terraced houses.
What was great is coming here and seeing a version of Hope with the Serve programme. You know, it's the Serve programme actually really ticks a lot of the boxes that we've been talking about. And then through stories like Jaden, you're kind of saying to yourself, all right, is there a version that happens nationwide? Is there a version that can be done at a much, much larger scale? That is going to be a massive logistical conundrum. But it is so worth it when you watch a kid like that, who a year ago is struggling, who's, you know, he's just this far away from going back to his old roots. And then he's got this program that can help him, right? And that's, I guess, you know, when people watch this film, so what's the point of it? What's the point? Well, this is the point, that there is hope. There's got to be ways that this can be done. You know, no issue is permanent. There's got to be a way out of it.
Pooja Kanda, Ronan's mother.
This is too dangerous to be not speak about it. It could happen to another child. We just need to get it right.
Samir from the St. Giles Trust.
What I want people to understand is that it takes a village to raise a child. What's happening with young people is they are burning down that village because they're not feeling the embrace of that place. And I'm inviting you to be part of this village and play into it and invest in our young people.
There's a bigger picture that needs looking at. Everybody deserves a chance at the end of the day, and it is about that chance. It's a no-brainer to me, to be honest.
I value life a lot more now. There's some beauty in the world for me. That wasn't there before.
Jaden.
If you've been a victim of crime, go online for details of organisations offering support at the BBC Action Line website.